Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Ever thought of starting your own business? Maybe looking at buying a franchise? Today's Career Buzz guests help you understand the ins and outs, ups and downs of running your own show, so stay dialed in for a roller coaster of a show. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, and we help people make career and life choices aligned with what really matters. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, so thanks for tuning in this morning. Michael Kavanaugh's three decades of career waves include lots of peaks and troughs, highs of satisfying successes, and lows of painful and personal anguish. Michael's experience in marketing, graphic design, and communications, and his expertise in advertising, web design, and internet marketing parallel his insights gained from experience and adversity. He's been a VP of creative services at an agency. He's won marketing magazine awards and a Webby Award. He's also lost everything and had to start from scratch. Stay tuned in for Michael Kavanaugh's Career Waves in the second part of today's show. But first, Gary Prenevost is the entrepreneurial franchise guy. He's an experienced franchise professional and entrepreneur, and he's been involved both in franchised and non-franchised businesses. Gary started his career in banking before leaving that for a family business. He then joined a training organization selling their business licenses until realizing he wanted his own. Eventually, Gary realized he wanted to help others achieve their life goals through living the entrepreneurial dream and joined an organization called FranNet in 2002, where he continues to help clients, like our next guest, find the franchise that fits. July 1st, 2001 was the virtual ribbon-cutting ceremony for Keylingo Translation's Toronto office, headed by Parker McDonald. Parker chose this franchise after searching for a great business opportunity, considering options like solar energy before connecting with FranNet, Gary Prenevost's service, and being introduced to Keylingo. Parker's prior career experience as a sales professional had him selling graphic supplies and equipment to the printing industry, working with well-known companies like Gestetner and Agfa Canada. Parker's story features some neat twists and turns that led from electronics to customer service to sales to a new franchise owner. Gary Prenevost and Parker McDonald, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Gary, what do you like about your career these days?
It's incredibly rewarding in that the very nature of what we do, Mark, we literally help to get people to change their lives. They what I call break free of the golden shackles of corporate life to set out in their own path and create more satisfaction, more freedom for their life.
And what do you do? It sounds like it's a kind of matchmaking service or some kind of fitting service between the individual and the franchisor. So how does it work?
That's exactly what we do is the matchmaking side of things, where a lot of people, when they go into business or consider going into business for themselves, they're just not sure what's out there. So and they don't know what's right for them. So we help them take several steps back, reverse engineer their search process, help them figure out what it is that they're good at, where their passions are, what they're not good at or don't want to do, and then look at about a dozen different business criteria on top of that. Then based on that, we introduce them to businesses that fit that model. And then we coach them through the research so that they can figure out for themselves what the best options are. We stay out of selling them onto a business. They need to sell themselves as the right business, or it's not the right business.
And you personally now, Gary, doing the job that you're doing, what strengths and skills do you personally draw on to be effective in your career?
I think the most important one is strong listening and communication skills. We really have to get to the heart of the issues of what people are dealing with, what they want, what they're afraid of, what are the things that are driving them, what are the things that they're driving away from, so that they can figure out for themselves where their key priorities are. I've always looked at business as a strong match is where all of the must-haves are there. In other words, if it's a must-have for the client, it's got to be part of the criteria of the business. And then, however, the more would-be nice-to-haves that there are, the better. But if I can't understand what the must-haves are, then I'm not effective for them.
Great. Thanks for that. I'm curious about the must-haves, and we're going to talk to Parker in a minute and find out what some of his must-haves were. Parker, what about you? What do you like about how things have been developing so far in your career?
Well, with the introduction to FranNet, I was really my wife and I were actually kind of blown away by the service that they provided, because of the fact that the profile that they came up with was was very was so exact a profile, you know, for somebody who basically had just met me through a series of interviews.
Yes.
So it was quite an impressive, you know, introduction into their organization and services, which led to discovery of Keylingo.
And what is Keylingo? If listeners are just completely unfamiliar with that, what is it? What is the franchise that you're actually working in now?
What we are is a worldwide network of translation. We do translation from any language. We're up in over 80 languages today. We can do digital content, printed content, anything that needs to be translated into a foreign language.
And as a kind of a new franchisee and a business owner now, what strengths and skills do you draw on to make for a promising and successful franchise experience?
Well, I'm just only about a week old into the game. I'm primarily using networking, you know, with people that I've sold to for the last 20 to 25 years, who have grown to become friends and have been giving me some coaching on some ideas and what they think and where we can go, and getting some introductions through them.
Great. So you're really building on the career experience that you've had as a sales professional with that network of people and the ability to communicate with them to build this business, although it's quite different now. Translation is a completely new ball game.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is a new ball game. It's different. It's a different market altogether. But once again, just using some existing contacts that I know have required services in the past.
Right on. Now let's step back a little bit in both of your stories just to find out how you got here before we come back and talk more about the franchise experience. Gary, if I start with you, I said in the intro you've been involved in all kinds of things. There was banking and there was a family business. What were some of those early turning points in your career?
I guess the first big one was getting into the bank. I was working construction and different jobs as a student and whatnot, and making good money, but realized that I looked at people who were 40 years old in the same career saying, I didn't want to be in that kind of lifestyle. So I went into the bank and just went into the management training stream and just progressed through the ranks. Doing each branch was a new experience in terms of turnaround of other challenges, and I just kept on getting more and more branches that were more challenges and not much more responsibility, not much more reward commensurate with the responsibility increase. So it was, I realized the bank, great learning opportunity, but it was a box for me. It was like I was stuck in, you have to do this way, that, you know, in this set of time and guidelines, and I realized it's not where I was. I was happy. So I decided to leave that and got into the entrepreneurial environment at the age of 27. Got into business with my dad and my brothers.
What was that business?
That was Live and Artificial Tropical Plants. We did
the
plant watering in buildings and whatnot. And if you look at Toronto, that company, I worked with them for 3.5 years, but the family dynamics and the business dynamics, family dynamics overrode business dynamics. And again, it was Gary's in a box.
Hang on, before we leave that, in case there are listeners who either are in family businesses right now or are contemplating getting into family businesses, do you have a couple of words of advice from what you've learned? Family businesses are well known to be like great opportunities, but also fraught with lots of potential pitfalls. What's the advice?
I think the most important thing for family business or any partnership is having clear boundaries, clear expectations. What are the responsibilities? What are the roles, and what are the policies and even the compensation based on performance? Because that's where I think a lot of people go wrong. Is, you know, well, I'm a brother, so therefore we get the same amount. Well, there's different responsibilities, different skills, all those different things. It's most businesses that struggle don't have clear boundaries or expectations.
Great advice. Thanks for that. Now, people who are in family businesses often stay there, and yet you left. So what was it that propelled you to leave, and how did the rest of the family react?
Oh, it was probably one of the biggest challenges of our family at the time. It was not an easy parting. One of the things that compelled me to leave was I had a new daughter, and the financial picture was such that when you have a pie being shared by six principals, as opposed to going on my own and getting a business, which is where I went to, which is a training franchise, where I was the sole person sharing that. So a lot of it was financial. A lot of it was stepping out on my own.
And this was the beginning then of your kind of entrepreneurial and more business-oriented
in the structured
experience.
Franchise environment, yes.
So that was a franchise at that point.
It was a business license, very similar to a franchise. So you had the systems, the processes, the toolbox, if you will. But I had the freedom to operate, do things my way with a good foundation.
Right. So what eventually happened with that experience that ultimately led you to start the next franchise, which I know you're in now?
Well, I progressed with that business for 7 years, all the way through that. I married the boss's daughter. That certainly helped. But then
other conversation about that one, Gary.
When he passed away, I went from being one of the top five franchisees in the system to being vice president of the national organization. We had 110 offices across Canada, multi-million dollar operation. I went from being calling my own shots, doing my thing when I wanted, to working in a corporate environment under the corporate rules with my wife as my boss.
How interesting.
That would be one word.
The wife is the boss.
That lasted for 4 years. We split up. She got the company, and then I was in transition, much like most other clients that we deal with.
Hang on, Gary. We got to just check in with you on that one. You know, that's a bit of an unusual situation with the wife as the boss and the family ties there, because you married in. And again, if anybody is having experience with relatives in their work environment, what's the main insight? Is it something to avoid? Can it work? If again, like you gave us the advice before about clear expectations, what's the magic to make it work?
I think what we did as a couple, what we did wrong as a couple is we didn't set time away from the business. The business became 7/24,
yes,
no matter what we were doing. I think when you're a spousal couple running a business, there's time for the couple. There's time for each individual, there's time for the family, and time for the business.
And important lesson.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest lessons of my life, and most painful.
So you left all of that, and then it was time to find something new. So what happened at that point?
Well, I knew things were breaking apart. I knew I was going to be leaving the company and everything, so I went on a search for... I liked the franchise industry. I had a strong reputation and relationships in the industry, so I started looking at other opportunities, and I found Franet. And so I started Franet in June of 2002. Built it up for several years. 2004, I hired somebody. 2005, it was running very well. I was in the top 10 of the system. 2006, I started getting bored, Mark. And what did I do? I had a staff working, so I decided, what else can I do? And I bought another master license with my father for a European concept, brought it over here, and that failed. That was one of the businesses that we had, the only one that I've had that has failed. And the biggest lessons came from that. Diversion of focus. There are numerous reasons that it didn't work. We did a lot of things right, but there were things that it just didn't work.
What was that business?
It was mobile advertising. The yellow trucks that were driving around Toronto, some people might remember them.
Yes, yes, yes.
We bought the business before the environmental awareness kicked in, and that was one of the things that didn't help. We brought on a franchisee that the first franchisee didn't work out, and that didn't help us, so we decided to roll back and took our lumps.
But you still had Franet running in the background.
Still had Franet running in the background, and the most important lesson from that was the first time in my life I was 100% focused on one thing, and that became Franet. And now we're number one in North America. Speaks to Toronto being one of the strongest franchise markets in North America, strongest entrepreneurial markets in North America, but it's also we're very good at what we do.
People are always curious about franchises, and we'll talk more about Parker. He's fresher into the experience of buying into it, so I'm going to talk to him in a moment about that. But from your experience now, the concept of buying a franchise, right? Franet, there it is. This is what it is. You got to kind of follow our rules. And I think a lot of people might think, well, first of all, they think that it's like Subway sandwich or a pizza thing. You know, they think food, first of all, I think. And so it's interesting to hear about a service-oriented franchise. People might think that it's very constraining and that they buy into something that they don't have any freedom. What can you say about that?
That is a continuum. what I call the freedom and flexibility continuum. There are businesses, franchise businesses out there that are very rigid, very structured, and the very nature of their business requires them to be to protect the integrity of their systems and processes, like a McDonald's or a Tim Hortons. You don't want to be messing around with their magic processes, their secret sauce, if you will. Other businesses, especially in the business-to-business or business-to-consumer service sector, which is where we focus, is there's a lot more freedom and flexibility. Depending on the nature of the service, the systems and processes are fairly structured, but how people go about getting business or how they create relationships or manage their staff, this is where the transferable skills that they've developed in their corporate lives apply so well.
Perfect. Thanks for that. That's a great segue into Parker's story, because it is about those transferable skills. So we've now kind of introduced the concept of the freedom and flexibility, I think, is an important concept for people to think about as they think about franchises. And then the next piece of it is what the whole range of these kinds of experiences are. We've been talking to Gary Prenevost, and we're talking also to Parker McDonald here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM. So, Parker, can I ask you to take us back here briefly and look at the key turning points in your career prior to you getting into this franchise? What did you start out with? I said something in the intro about electronics. What happened there?
Well, it's that was my introduction into the business world. You know, getting out of high school was getting a electronic degree out of DeVry and moving into a customer service role, servicing various pieces of equipment, including room size cameras and a variety of other things. Interest in sales just came about through, you know, being in front of customers, doing training for clients, and as a result, eventually migrated into the sales arena and continued so for the next 20-odd years.
So it's interesting how people have ideas about their careers. You took electronics thinking you'd be into some kind of electronics or technician role. Was that the game plan?
Handy is is usually how people describe me, and so it's always been something. It was unusual to move into pushing a pencil, if you will, as opposed to actually fixing something or building something. So it was a bit of a career shift.
And that shift from the electronics and the service, which was much more hands-on and you're a handy guy, to the sales role. Now that's some people will go through that transition. Maybe some listeners have even gone through it themselves. But it's an interesting transition, and it's one that people often don't think about. And in fact, it seems to me, having talked to thousands of clients myself about career choices, that there's an initial, I don't know what it is, something about a negative reaction to the possibility of working in sales, and especially younger people, earlier careers, and yet this transition sometimes happens and it turns out to be a good thing. What was that moment of transition for you?
It was such a long time ago. It was difficult, but it was the ramp was a little easier because of the fact that I was in front of customers, training them,
yes,
and teaching them, and that was my migration path into sales. So it was something that came easily through that path. The fact that I was out training people, graphics, and teaching them how to make negative film was something that gave me that one-on-one customer experience.
And was it you choosing the sales role and applying for it, or did somebody see it in you and said, "Hey, Parker, why don't you join us in sales?"
It was both.
It was both. Yeah. Somebody saw you there and they said, "Whoa!" And what was your reaction when you first thought sales?
There was a little bit of anxiety, of course, just as you kind of mentioned earlier.
Yes.
No question, moving into a sales role, it was a little bit intimidating at first, and once got a year or two behind me, then it became a little bit more natural.
Now, you had a good run with sales, working with some well-known companies, selling all kinds of high-end equipment and so on. What happened towards the end of that? There's a turning point because things changed. Where was your head at as this kind of wound down prior to you making this shift?
Corporations, they change, and those changes sometimes don't include certain people, and I became one of those individuals. So as a result, it left me open to looking into some other areas. Getting back into, corporate life just didn't seem to be the right thing for me to do, and I had been looking for some businesses to either do, as a side type fun thing to do, or And then, of course, moving into it full-time with Keylingo.
Yeah. So what were some of the ideas that you had explored when this happened and the transition happened, not of your choosing, and it happens to a lot of people during the recession that was it was rampant in this country, in the U.S. And then people start to think, what am I going to do now? So what kinds of ideas did you explore?
The primary one that I had been very interested in for quite some time had been into solar energy.
Yes.
To the point that I'd even been attending Seneca in last year, just, you know, getting some experience with that. But it was just the capital investment that really kind of held me back from making a move, you know, just equipment and inventory and so on. So that's when I went through the exploratory phase and ended up meeting with Franet and got introduced to it, to a whole new world.
How did you connect up with Franet in the first place?
It was through a career transition team that introduced me to Franet.
Oh, is that right? So you got some career transition service, a package out of that situation that you had left.
Exactly.
And one of the consultants said, hey, why don't you check into this franchise thing with Franet?
Yes, and they were, at the time and still do, you know, have where they'll do seminars and do speaking engagements. And I attended one of their meetings.
Yeah, and so you first heard about them through that situation, and then what was your reaction to the idea of possibly opening a franchise? Did you have one of these kind of negative reactions, oh, like franchises aren't for me?
At first I did, there's no question. The formula that Franet uses, whereby, you know, 90% of new startup businesses fail, was some math that kind of stuck with me. So I, you know, carried on, you know, with the interview process and learning more about, you know, myself and where I would fit and what would be a good fit for me was an ideal service, and that was just the selling point that pushed me over. And
so a service as opposed to something like solar, which has a bunch of equipment and inventory. Was that the key?
That was key. It was just not having to carry inventory, not to have to hire a lot of employees to start with. You know, not having to make a huge investment in a variety of different equipment or even a building for that matter.
Was that Gary had mentioned earlier this idea of must-haves, you know, that clients like you, you're a client of his or of his organization, and he mentioned things that clients must have. What was on your list of things that were really important to you in making a choice?
Once again, moreover, not just having the huge expense of inventory, getting into a service-based business, you know, which is primarily web-based. You know, the only tools you need is a cell phone, a vehicle, and a laptop, and it was a turnkey.
Turnkey makes it easy.
It really made it easy.
Can you talk a bit about the money? I mean, people are curious about money. It's an important part of making these choices. The investment that you need to put in, to the degree that you can share that with listeners, and the expectation of what's going to come back to you over the coming couple of years.
Well, that business plan is still evolving, so I'm still
as business plans do.
But with Keylingo, because of the fact that once again there was no overhead required for the business, so as a result the investment portion was a lot lower than you would expect with a lot of franchises.
Gary, can you give us just a range? Like if listeners are curious, and I don't know if you're allowed to say the numbers, like, but I want to have listeners get a sense of what's out there and how much it costs to invest in a franchise, whether it's a service one, you know, from smaller ones up to the big, huge ones that, you know, are name brands that everybody recognizes.
I would consider there being four categories. The first category would be in the $50,000 to $125,000. This is where a lot of the service franchises are, either business-to-business or business-to-consumer service franchises.
So would Keylingo be somewhere
Keylingo
in there?
Keylingo would absolutely be there. And by the way, I'm including working capital in this. You can buy some franchises at the franchise fee alone. It might be $15,000 or $20,000. There's, you know, always when they're that low, there's some questions or flags that you want to consider. But once you get into the $50,000 to $75,000 range, they've got good systems or processes usually. Then you've got the working capital to get it to break even. this is in this range because they don't have the bricks and mortar, the equipment that are typical. With then the next level is 125 to 250 thousand. This is where a lot of the commercial services businesses might be, and this, you know, the entire printing industry or the sign and the digital imaging business, because you're talking equipment, you're talking retail space,
back to all that inventory and equipment that Parker was just saying he was trying to avoid.
The next I would put 250 to 500, and this is where you're getting into the service-based retail concepts like hair care or some fast casual food, and then above 500, and that's the more specialized food or larger concept or master licenses, which is the buying the rights to a city or a province or even a country and becoming the franchisor for that area.
Right, so quite a range. And when we talk about these numbers, people finance it, so they don't necessarily have to have the 50 or 125 in their pocket. They have some down payment, kind of like a house or any other investment?
Yes. Before I answer that question, about 50% of all businesses, franchise businesses, are under $250,000. One of the biggest myths is that it's expensive to start, therefore I can't afford it, and it's long hours for low pay, and I don't want to do that. And whereas the service-based franchises, the lower cost franchises, they don't have the hours issue because you're working to your client's hours, which is business to business or Monday to Friday in a lot of cases. But on the financing side, based on good credit score, the banks are prepared to play a half to two-thirds, depending on the concept. The stronger the concept, the more they'll lend. The stronger the credit score, the more they'll lend. We've had clients who fund a $250,000 business on 90% lines of credit.
90%. So that means that they're only paying $25,000.
Yeah, and then of their own money, and the rest is borrowed.
Very interesting. All right, just before we wrap up this first part of the interview and then take a break and come back to Michael Cavanaugh, let me ask you just on your own personal stories here, one question to each of you. Based on the twists and turns that we've heard in some of your experiences with making career choices, what have you learned that you could share with listeners about making good choices? Gary?
Listen to the head and the heart and the gut. The three, if the head is overriding the heart or the gut, or the heart is overriding the head, do some more research. And the Canadian Franchise Association, one of their taglines is investigate before investing.
Mm-hmm.
That also means investigate your own skills and passions and alignment.
Right, that's probably the part of it that people miss. They're busy investigating.
They
what's
buy
out
a
there.
Good business, but it's a good business for somebody else. It's not a good business for them. Right, I would be a horrible Tim Hortons franchise. As much as I'd love the cash flow, I've got two teenagers. That's enough.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that lesson, Parker. What have you learned about making good career and life choices?
I think it's more along the lines of just self-awareness, just being completely kind of understanding where you're at, what you're capable of doing, what you're prepared to do or committed to do. That as well, the commitment part of it is huge. It's not like the business is going to come to you. So when you get up in the morning, you stroll down to your home-based office, you want to make sure that you're prepared to pick up the phone or create that activity to generate business. So there is a huge commitment, and you really have to be self-aware in what you're capable of doing and what you're prepared to do.
Right on. Thanks for that advice. Okay, guys, we're going to come back to both of you, Gary Prenevost and Parker McDonald, in the latter part of the show and take some questions from callers from listeners if they have some comments or questions. We're going to take a musical break, and our next guest, Michael Cavanaugh, is here. Michael, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thanks, Mark.
You brought a piece of music in. I believe it's of your own creation. Do you want to just set it up for us?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a little tune called Goodbye to September. It's a song I wrote a few years ago and recorded, and there's some stuff in there. It's a personal song, but there's some stuff that's relevant to our conversation today.
Great. Thanks, Michael Cavanaugh.
Say goodbye to September. Wasn't much to remember. Promises lie scattered now, like leaves in November.
I gotta say, you blew my mind. You showed up right on time to catch me in mid-fall. It didn't seem to bother you at all. From my cheek I can see everything except for me. That's one thing I cannot do. And so, my love, I turn to you. You didn't ask me to explain or show you where I had the pain. You gave me back my dignity when you said, just let him be. We faced head on a private Armageddon, ripped from the pages of our own Middle Ages. But you won't fail if you never try, and if you don't care, you will never cry. And if you can say you are not afraid, you can't say that you were brave. From my tree.
Good cut.
We're back at Career Buzz, and I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on to our next interview, I want to let listeners know about the Career and Life Wellbeing Cafe by Career Cycles. Next date is actually tomorrow, Saturday, July the 9th at Dark Horse Espresso Bar. That's 682 Queen Street East at Broadview. More info at careercycles.com. Michael Kavanaugh's three decades of career waves include lots of peaks and troughs, highs of satisfying successes and lows of painful and personal anguish. Michael's experience in marketing communications and graphic design and his expertise in printing advertising, web design, and internet marketing parallel his insights gained from experience in adversity. He's been a VP of creative services at an agency. He's won marketing magazine awards and a Webby Award. He's also lost everything and had to start from scratch. Michael Kavanaugh joins us live in the studio. Welcome to Career Buzz, Michael.
Thank you, Mark.
So what's happening now in your career? Things have changed a lot, and we're going to find out about that over the course of this interview. But what's happening now, and how are you feeling about it?
Well, I'm feeling very good about it. And what's happening now, I guess, is I could say, is that I'm bringing all the threads from the past together through the different experience, both professional and personal, and doing what I really love to do and helping other people.
And what's the new business that's emerging? What's the new concept that's coming through?
It's basically marketing and design. There's some design aspects. I guess basically it's marketing, development, coaching, and helping small businesses, entrepreneurs, independent contractors, helping them to get their marketing organized and launched.
And what are you going to be drawing on in terms of your experiences, knowledge, and skills that's going to propel you through this experience to succeed?
Well, first of all, just the straight experience background. I mean, the professional experience, been through, you know, print design, publishing, internet, etc. But also the personal development. Parker alluded to, you know, the importance of self-awareness. So I think that it all has to be put together in a package where self-awareness helps helping me move forward, as well as my, you know, professional experience.
So now let's talk about how that self-awareness came about. And if you could take me back about the earlier years of your career, there was a lot of quick successes. What was the first major career move that you had?
Well, first of all, I went to art school. So nobody who wants a successful career is going to go to art school. But
unless they want to be a successful artist.
Right. Well, that's a bit of an oxymoron. No, I'm just kidding. So I think the thing that really happened to me very early on is I stumbled, although I went to art school, I started working in a print shop, okay, in 19, 75. And so I got exposed to print production, and that combined with the creative aspect was very valuable. So although I always had the design and the color and the printing, but also the painting rather, I also had the understanding of print production. So as a designer, that's a big asset. And I just kept developing that technical aspect of my skill.
Interesting that, you know, we're talking about art school, and mm-hmm. maybe we have some listeners who either went or are in art school now. Mm-hmm. OCAD is just around the corner from where we mm-hmm. sit right here mm-hmm. on the CIUT studio. Mm-hmm. What was your aspiration going to art school?
I didn't really have an aspiration. I just wanted to go to art school. I've always been creative. I was always a really good drawer, and I just always loved to do what I love to do, and I didn't care about the future too much. I just wanted to really explore my talents and be good at it.
Great. Yeah, I mean, and that's part of the purpose of post-secondary, as long as you know that that's the expectation going in, right? So you weren't expecting somebody to deliver you an art career the moment you graduated.
No.
So how did the idea start to form in art school or at the end of it that, okay, well, let me find a job now. Let me figure out what I'm going to do with myself.
Well, again, it was really the work in the print shop that tweaked me on, because, and again, I kind of rolled into it. It wasn't really a plan. It was just that I was there was work, there was jobs, you know. If you know how to design and you could do layout, you know color and composition and we're good at it, they needed designers. So that led to basically everything that followed career-wise.
And so what followed? What was that first part of your career?
Well, for the first part through the 80s, I was doing, actually I wound up teaching art at university for a while. I wound up as a teacher. But I never liked teaching that much. I'd rather just do it. So I was, I worked through, in the 80s, basically doing freelance design. So working for studios, agencies, your basic freelance designer. And then in the early 90s, I got into desktop publishing. So I got on the Mac and that whole revolution. And then wound up doing magazines because, of course, with the advent of digital technology, I mean, I had to laugh when Parker was talking about teaching how to do film negatives and stuff. That was the old days. We did all that. You know, there was a lot of it was all manual. Once digital came in, the power went to the designer big time because the barriers to entry really dropped, because you could do the whole magazine prep work and send the files for publishing and printing. So that was really empowering for designers. Disintermediated a whole level of the industry, typographers and stat houses and all that. But for a designer, it was fantastic. So I got into that, wound up being fairly successful, again, winning some awards, Best Magazine Design in Canada for Business Press. And then in that, I parlayed, again, stumbled into the internet through publishing and through my editor. We started doing a website in the early 90s and back with Mosaic before it was even Netscape. So again, I kind of stumbled into a whole new technology. By that point, I could bring my whole expertise around design, communication, publishing, and then having worked for advertising companies, bring in the idea of marketing communication as well into an internet, a web-based type of thing. And I wound up in the late 90s working, doing huge million-dollar websites for financial, for Sears, for all kinds of sites, and basically just wound up running the creative department.
So was that now finally an agency? Like you were actually shifting from being a freelance designer into working with an agency?
Yeah, and the key there was I got married and had a couple of daughters. So it was all of a sudden I had to become very aware of income and quickly parlayed that quickly into a very good job in an emerging industry.
So that worked for you, because a lot of freelancers worry about that. Is their resume, is their experience going to be sufficient to get the job for the more formal employer-employee relationship?
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to work pretty easily for you?
Yeah, again, because of the experiences I've had, because the publishing, for instance, I mean, there's highly technical things involved. It wasn't, even though it was freelance, it was a lot of responsibility to create magazines and things. So I had the skills. And in fact, at the beginning of the internet, it was kind of lucky because they had a bunch of kids who basically know how to program and develop. What they hired me for was understanding how to talk to clients,
right,
how to work out strategies for communication. And again, publishing, I can't emphasize the importance of publishing in a web context, because it's a publishing machine. A website really is about publishing. And what's your engine for that?
We're talking to Michael Cavanaugh here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM. Michael, things changed, though. You mm-hmm. moved your way up mm-hmm. into this world of internet, mm-hmm. publishing mm-hmm. and communication. Mm-hmm. The bubble burst in 2000. Mm-hmm. What happened to you?
Well, I guess, you know, I call it the perfect storm. So on the one hand, the internet bubble crashed. My company went out of business. The whole industry went out of business. A bunch of us who had been you know, very successful in an industry where we're all competing for jobs that didn't exist, for companies that had gone bankrupt, in an industry that was had been destroyed. That, in conjunction with a divorce, a long acrimonious custody battle, and so that process, getting any assets I might have had taken away from me, and then the attendant depression, the whole downward spiral to just basically a complete crash and burn on any on every level.
So from a pretty successful career by, you know, normal external standards, the money and the prestige and the good job, down to what sounds like the bottom of the experience, of human experience.
I mean, taking antidepressants all day and just getting out to the food bank.
What kept you going?
Well, no question, what kept me going was close friends and family. I mean, there's people around me that were willing to support me as long as I need. Without that, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be anywhere today.
So how long did that last? How long did that period of your life last?
Well, it was too long. I mean, it went from 2000 when it started with the crash of the bubble, and custody battles were already underway. I struggled to try and get work for like 4 years. And by that time, you know, by 2004, he's a guy in his 50s. His current resume ends the decade, you know, in the last decade. I was toxic, you know. I mean, and plus my own personal disposition at that time wasn't exactly inspiring. So by 2005, I was out of commission. I was incommunicado. I was living in a room in my sister's house, and that was not getting out. I couldn't go outside.
So there's real ups and downs in everybody's career story, and I appreciate you sharing honestly about what happened there, because listeners will hear that, whether they're whether they had the dramatic ups and downs that you've had or other ones, they feel difficult and painful to everybody. And so
let me just say on that, because that is an important point. I'm only talking about this because I know so many other people go through it, and one of the biggest, most painful thing is the isolation and the feeling that really people don't want to hear. You don't even want to believe it.
Yes.
So that is important.
So that was 2005. That's still some years ago. And now there seems to be a trajectory out of that, or waves, as we've been saying, instead of an arc, waves, career waves. What has helped you to move out of that?
Well, personal development, getting through the personal issues. A big part of that was being reconnected with my daughters in Mustafa, because they had been moved out of the province. So that was really what was the core of the total destruction. I thought I'd lost them. The reconnection with them, in fact, my daughter now wants to be in marketing. Gave me the emotional bandwidth to start to say, okay, what did I used to do? I used to be good at stuff. I used to have fun, and sort of start to excavate my way through.
Yes.
And then realize that there was a lot of assets from the past that, hey, perhaps these could be recovered, and I could use those again.
So you got the idea to do that, right? And now, how did you turn that into an intention and an action?
Well, first of all, you know, I started to come back and start looking for jobs, and you know, I'd go to a lot of interviews, and as men in their late 50s who've been out of work for 8 years, they don't say we're not going to give you the job. They're impressed with the resume, and they want to end the interview as soon as possible. And I just went through a couple of years of not getting any feedback. Then I realized, you know what? And I had been working a little bit with people, and I went, you know what? I have something to supply. Never mind the jobs. There's work out there. I have value. So let's skip the job part, and let's go into the self-employment. Let's go into giving what I have to offer to people that want it directly.
Did you, you know, just because we're having the conversation with the franchising concept, when people do have the idea of going it on their own, sometimes they think about starting their own service or product-based business, and sometimes they do think about a franchise. Did you consider it at all?
No.
And how, and just hearing what we've heard so far, and we're going to talk a little bit more about it, how does the idea of the franchise, even a service-oriented franchise, strike you relative to starting out on your own?
You know, I haven't thought about it. I'd be open to considering anything. From what I've seen of franchises, I haven't seen anything that really corresponds to what I do. It's a really direct professional service.
Yes.
I mean, I don't need any investment.
Yes.
And I don't need any super infrastructure per se, because it's one of those professional services like accounting or something where you're dealing directly with individuals.
Right.
So, but I'm open to any. you know, suggestions. Or
so you're at the beginning of this process, because listeners may also be thinking about doing this themselves, starting their own you know, direct connection to clients with whatever service or expertise they have. So what have you put in place now to move this forward?
Well, you know, working and planning with a lot of people. So I mean, I'm just finishing up a business plan right now, working with a lot of consultants. I mean, one of the things I learned about my own personal crash and burn was that there's help there. And there are people that will help you. And, you know, if you could just find it to ask, and this comes again back to Parker's point about self-awareness. If you're just aware that you know some things, there's some things you don't know, it's important to know what you don't know.
Yes.
And go find it.
And where did you find that? Who did you seek help from?
You know, I started just by going to some community centers and volunteering, oddly enough. And it was just being around people that were going through stuff themselves and just getting into a culture where it's okay to ask, it's okay to help. And that when you help, one of the ways to get help is to help, oddly enough. Because I started volunteering. And because I couldn't get any work, so I said, well, I'll volunteer. And when I realized that people were benefiting from it, it changed the whole narrative from, you know, you're a loser to you have something to offer that's valuable. So even though there was no money involved at that point, it switched the core story around.
That's an amazing insight. One way to get help is to give help.
Absolutely.
Right? And we've heard that before on this show, and the idea of volunteering being a real tool to develop yourself and your own career. People often don't look at it that way. They just look at it as, I'm going to go and I'm going to help, I'm going to pitch in, but they don't realize how much it's actually going to help them and develop their own careers.
Well, in this instance, it's a place called Six St. Joseph House,
which
is a community center downtown Toronto, and the Yellow Door Learning Center. And a lot of the people there, you know, they're in recovery for addiction. There's mental health issues. There's all kinds of disasters. I say life has a lot of ways of taking people down. It doesn't really matter. And then I wound up going, yeah, you know, I'll do their newsletter and stuff like that. So helping them out, and all of a sudden, it turned the story around.
Now, you also, there's some connection with this organization called NABS.
Yes.
And I know we have had several NABS players here on Career Buzz before. Can you just say how that works and how that helped you? Because that's an interesting one for people in your field, in your industry.
Yeah, National Advertising Benevolent Society, NABS. It's a fabulous organization. Again, working through Six St. Joseph House, wound up with a guy there who's a veteran. I call him the original madman, a veteran of the ad agencies. And he was telling me, why don't you go ask NABS? And I went, well, you know, I'm not really an advertising guy. I've been out of work for so long. And basically encouraged me to get in contact with them. I finally did. And they were totally receptive. They said, no, absolutely, you qualify. And they were just, you know, and that led me to a whole other group of counselors, of business help, business planners. I mean, they have a whole network of support for people like me, and I'm using that to help me get up. So it is a fabulous organization. And again, there's help out there.
Right. And for listeners who are in the marketing communications area, it's nabs.org. And they are helpful. They connect to Career Cycles, which is our company for career help, and they have access to financial planners, and they even have some assistance to help people
Absolutely.
Through it. So it's a great charitable organization, one that many people don't know about. So that's good to mention them. So, Michael, just to wrap up this part and then to come back and have a bit of an open conversation, given the career waves that we've talked about here on the show, What have you learned that you could share with listeners about making good choices and keeping yourself positive and moving forward on and riding the waves instead of drowning in them? Mm-hmm. What can you share with listeners about that?
Well, I mean, really all I can say about that, Mark, is, again, this idea of self-awareness that the only, you know, I never made bad career choices. I always had good choices. I was good at it. It wasn't that. There was personal issues. It wasn't self-awareness. Again, self-awareness. Work on yourself. Learn to what your own, you know, weaknesses and strengths are. Creating self-awareness just automatically leads to external. If you're making good internal choices, you wind up making good external choices. And one of the key things to get me through was learn to associate with good people.
Yes.
Like when I thought, well, I can't do anything. I'm a total lost everything. I'm a failure. But if I just associate with really good people, that'll help. And right away, so just the people you choose to to be with. But again, that goes back to personal development. Why do you pick the people you pick? You know? So self-awareness. Work on yourself and the rest of the external world will take care of itself.
Right on. Thanks for that advice, Michael Cavanaugh. We're talking to Michael Cavanaugh, also Gary Prenevost and Parker McDonald here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin at CIUT 89.5 FM. Guys, we have a few more minutes here. I'd like to open the conversation not only to the three of us here. If listeners have comments or questions about what they've heard, do you have a question about getting into a franchise? Do you have a comment about your own personal career waves and ups and downs? Give us a call. Join us live on air. The phone number to call is 416-946-7000. That's 416-946-7000 with a comment or question about today's conversation. Gary and Parker, let me bring you back into it. We've now just heard a little bit of Michael's personal story, and I'm just wondering, first on the personal side, and then I want to talk more about the professional side. Everybody has had some big personal experiences. Gary, you told us about some personal family situations. Parker, things happen to you in your career that not of your choosing. What are the things that help us stay resilient in our careers? What are some of the things that, you know, you get hit, bad things happen, you get pushed around, and you need to come back up and deal with it? And here we all, you know, here we all are. What are some things that you can pick on from your own experiences that have helped you maintain resiliency?
I think for me, it's been, I think, Michael, you nailed it, is self-awareness. What I mean by that for me is when I've had my toughest hits, after I got through the pain of dealing with them, what were the lessons?
Yes.
What was it that this was given to me for that I needed to learn? Because one of the things I found, if I didn't figure out the lesson, it was coming at me again. And until I figured it out, I couldn't grow.
So in other words, you know, if anybody is out there in a painful moment right now in their careers and lives, the question to ask is, what are the lessons here? Not to wallow in it, but to deal with it.
Why is this happening? What am I not learning that I need to learn so I can grow past this?
Great. Good question to lead to self-awareness, to ask oneself constructive. Parker?
For me, it was primarily my family. Shelley and my son Angus are, you know, huge fans, big supporters, and they have a unique talent of keeping somebody motivated and upbeat about things and looking at the other side of change. And
right on. So the idea that other people actually have a huge impact on helping us in our careers and lives and helping us be resilient, families, friends, to support us through some of these things.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, like Gary said, the idea of what lessons I learned is a key part of that is if you tend to externalize all your problems, in other words, it's all the fault of somebody else or something else, until you can take that inside and say, well, maybe I had a part in that, but what part of that could I switch around? That's a key change driver.
Yeah, huge insight. So taking responsibility for some of the things that happened rather than the blame game, mm-hmm. which is pretty easy mm-hmm. to do when things are bad. It's their fault. They're stupid. They did this to me. She did that.
Right.
Like, it's all externalized.
And
right?
Like Gary said, you wind up having that same external attack all the time.
Yes.
Because you never addressed the internal part of it.
Yes. Let's talk for a moment about the choices that people make when it comes to making starting one's own business. Right, because now here we are, Michael, you're at the beginnings of starting your own kind of one-man show, a service mm-hmm. industry. We've been talking about franchises. What are some things to think about? Gary, maybe you can help us start out by the questions people should be asking themselves if they're starting to get that kind of itch that, like, I want to do this on my own. What are some questions people should ask themselves?
I think there's four primary questions to help people really figure out, help, you know, what do they should be looking at and what should they not be looking at, because the answers help them qualify and disqualify opportunities. First question is, what am I really good at that I like to do a lot? This is the passion.
Great question. And I try and start each one of our interviews with that question, because I want us all to be thinking about that. What are our strengths? Not just the ones that other people say we're good at, because, and maybe you can say something about that. People might say, gee, I'm pretty good with Excel spreadsheets, but they're very social and they hate doing it. You know, so should you formulate your whole career around, and I call that an asset? Or do you really have to separate the things that you're pretty good at but you don't like to do from the things that you're good at that you love to do?
That's question three, is what do I not like to do?
Okay.
Question two is, what am I not good at but really like to do? This is where growth comes in, because as people go into business, they're going to grow or they're going to shrink because they're going to get beat up. So if they look at what they know they like to do, again, staying in line with passions, but I'm not good at it, then is there an opportunity for the business to provide that growth in a direction I want to grow?
Yes.
Number three, what do I don't want to do? What is it I don't like that I don't want to do day in, day out? And the day in, day out is the key part, because every business has stuff that it's not fun, it's not pleasant. You know, for some people, it's cold calling. It's interesting. You know, when we were talking about sales earlier on, when Parker was talking about sales, I hear all the time, I don't like selling. What they're saying is, I don't like prospecting. Once I get past the prospecting, I can persuade people. I can do the needs assessment. So I think people have to understand the sales or the business generation role.
Yes. Good distinction there. Yeah.
And the fourth question is, what's missing in my life that having a business would enable me to fulfill or realize? If they can, and thinking on paper, if they can think that on paper and start to, then from that bubble up, what are the must-haves, non-negotiables?
Right on. Good advice. And I'm going to put those questions on our site too. We're just about out of time here. I want to give you each a chance just to let listeners know in case they're interested. Gary, if people want to find out more about FranNet, what do they do?
www.frannet, FranNet.com. Or they can reach me 905-405-6300.
And Parker, people are interested in translating documents or whatever, how do they get in touch with you?
www.keylingo.com.
Yeah.
Or they can reach me at 905-361-2857, and I'd look forward to talking to them.
Great. And we'll put the links there too. And I know, Michael, I'll get an email address from you, and we'll link that to the Career Cycle site.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks, everybody, for joining us here on Career Buzz. Gary Prenevost.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Parker McDonald and Michael Cavanaugh.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to Career Buzz, the show that empowers lives, enriches careers, energizes organizations here on CIUT 89.